Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPT 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, welcome back. Here we go. Now, I've changed my co-hosts on this show. I mean, Mr. Brian Turnoff had to turn off. And the ever-present David and Martino is back, which is real exciting. You know, it's exciting to have you back. You know, it's got to have some sort of thing going on. Okay, so we're going to get into it. So we changed from science fiction, and now we're going back into a true crime story, a true story. We've had this guest on before, David M. Bears. Thank you for being here, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, David, so people that don't know you, before we talk about the book too much, kind of what's your history and got you into writing books like this?
Well, I never dreamed I'd be an author, but my background is in law enforcement. And then, but then when I left law enforcement, I went into private practice as a licensed investigator here in New York. And since then, I've worked on a lot of high-profile cases. And this one, like my other one, was kind of I felt it was a wrongful conviction. And it was a story that needed to be told. So that was kind of my inspiration for writing my first book as well as my second. So I did that, and I just got it published here this past week, and it's live now on Amazon, and I'm anxious for my readers to get a hold of it.
So what? How did you find this story? Now this is the it's called Immunity for Murder, and it's the Veronica Taft story. So how did you find Veronica Taft, or how did you find the story?
Well, I was directly involved. Veronica Taft was arrested back in September of 2011, and she was accused of murdering her two-year-old son 8 months earlier in the end of December 2010. She was a young single mom. She had four small children all under the age of five, and she was accused of killing her two-year-old during that time. But the investigation dragged on for like 8 months, even though the evidence initially, within the first couple of days, pointed to the boyfriend. For whatever reason, they kind of turned the tides and went after Veronica. And then 8 months later, they arrested her, indicted her. And then a year after that, they convicted her of murder and manslaughter. But shortly after she was arrested, I received a call from her attorney. His name is Dave Butler. from Vestal, New York. I'd worked with him before on other defense cases, and he said he needed my help. So I met with him, and he explained the story, and I adapted a case, and I was involved with a case thereafter, including during the trial itself. I actually sat with the attorney at the defense table in defense of Veronica. So that's how I got involved. Like I said, she was convicted after a two-week trial, and she was sentenced to 25 years to life in state prison and incarcerated at the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women down in Westchester County, New York.
So when a case like that comes up and you get asked to help, of course, you don't know Veronica or anything about it until you get on the case.
Right.
How do you know when the person is innocent? Like, I mean, because everyone says they're innocent, right? That's kind of the old story.
Yeah.
Or they didn't do it.
Well, like I said, the evidence in this case pointed to the boyfriend all along. And it was rather bizarre that they even decided to go after her. She had a rock-solid alibi that was verified four ways. The doctor who did the autopsy established an estimated time of death to be between 3 and 4 a.m. And during that time, she was at work. She was working full-time on a night shift at a local high school from 11 p.m. until 7 a.m. while her boyfriend babysat the four kids. So that was the first red flag for me, was that she had this solid alibi and the estimated time of death. You know, we argued that pretty aggressively during the trial, and obviously it didn't work. But then there was other issues in the case as well, evidence that wasn't examined. Incredible witnesses. They had a jailhouse snitch that they used that he was just all over the place, looking for a deal for himself. And so it all came together, and they ended up convicting this woman. And she went to prison for altogether about 5.5 years. But the most amazing thing was when her appeal finally went through, It was like an unprecedented decision by the appellate court, and they found that the evidence, the verdict was against the weight of the evidence, and they threw out her murder and manslaughter convictions, and they really blasted the police and prosecution for the methods and evidence they used to convict her. It was a pretty impressive decision. So that she was released from a prison. And at first, I thought she'd have to go and have another trial, but that's not what the appellate court said. They threw it out entirely, so she was exonerated, and they clearly pointed the finger back at the boyfriend. Well, that's what prompted me to I knew she was innocent all along, but the appellate court decision kind of reaffirmed that, and that's what led me to end up writing the story.
What was it about her that the police didn't like? Or what, was there something, was the boyfriend kind of friends with the police there? Or like, how did this all go that way if it looks so much like the boyfriend and she sort of was set up, you know, she had an alibi and everything like that? I just wonder, so what was it about this case that made the police go after her?
I really don't know for sure why they switched gears and went after her. Like I said, all the evidence was pointing toward him. But one of the things that they were working with was some of Veronica's friends or so-called friends of hers, when they found out Lyric died, they came forward and started telling the police about some prior claiming there were some bad things happening with Veronica and her kids. But those same allegations had been made previously and investigated by Child Protective Services. And not one of them was ever substantiated. In fact, the Child Protective Services wrote up several reports that were unfounded when they went to Veronica's house to check on her kids and to drug test her. Her kids never showed any signs of injuries or bruises or neglect, anything like that. and her drug tests were clean every time. But yet, those same people were allowed to come into the trial and testify to all those prior allegations, even though none of them were substantiated.
Well, I was just wondering, was the boyfriend ever charged?
No. In fact, that's where the title of the book comes from. He was granted immunity.
Oh, I see.
Oh, he...
So he testified against her, then.
He testified against her.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty bizarre, Al. Like I said, the doctor that did the autopsy had estimated the time of death between 3 and 4 a.m. And so that was a big hurdle that they had to get over, and they really couldn't. And but they got the doctor to admit during grand jury and the trial that it was possible to have been several hours earlier. And that really didn't make any sense to me or the attorney that I worked for. So they offered testimony that was just based on possibilities and assumptions that this happened earlier, like before she went to work, which would mean, you know, 6 hours or more. And that just never made any sense. And the other kind of a bizarre thing was during the autopsy, the doctor found some contents in the boy's stomach, and he preserved those for future examination. There was about 50 grams of some type of food. He couldn't identify it visually, but they never sent it out for testing, and that became a problem because, according to the doctor, food will clear from the stomach within an hour or two after eating it. Lyric's last known meal was like at 5 o'clock before, you know, that evening, earlier that evening. But then, supposedly, the boyfriend fed all the kids, all four of them, some French fries and tater tots after Veronica left for work. But the boyfriend claimed that even though all four of the plates were clean, he never saw the little boy eating his. So we were anxious to find out what the stomach contents were, because we were quite certain it was going to be like remnants of a potato product, but they never tested it to find out what it was. And the other thing that was really pretty bizarre was when the baby went to the hospital, he was just wearing a diaper and a hoodie and a shirt underneath. So they secured all his clothing and a diaper, and they examined the clothing later, about a week later, and they found specks of blood on the outside of Lyric's diaper. The boy's name was Lyric. But the thing is, that according to the autopsy report, there was no external bleeding. It was all internal. He'd been beaten badly. So where does the blood come from? But they never tested it. And the bizarre thing was when the boyfriend's brought in for his interview that very same day, later that day, his knuckles are bleeding. And he wow. claims that he punched a wall in the living room because he was frustrated about what happened to the boy. And that's true. He did punch the wall. And Veronica saw him do that. But our position was that the only reason he punched the wall was to cover up where he had slammed the boy's head into the wall. And he, in the process, he raked his knuckles, and they started bleeding. So when he changed Lyric's diaper, put a new diaper on him, and redressed him, he got blood on the diaper. But like I said, they never tested it. And then they actually came into court and said that there was no value to doing that.
So did you kind of assume that it was just incompetence, or do you think it was more malicious that they did this?
Oh boy, you know, it's hard, you know. Initially, yeah. I thought it was just incompetence, but you know, this department, you know, it wasn't their first rodeo. They get a lot of cases, and I've never seen anything like this before. I even know some of the investigators that were involved. I'd never known them to do anything like that. It just seemed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A bad decision to go after her as opposed to the boyfriend when everything was pointing to him.
It's kind of crazy. So basically the baby was beat to death then.
Beaten very badly. I mean, he had a lacerated liver that got detached from the spine. Half of his blood volume was in his abdomen, and he had a swollen and bleeding brain. Both of which, according to the doctor, would have been fatal.
I was just wondering if she was exonerated, but did she ever get her other children back?
Yes. It took a long time, but she did get her kids back, and they're doing pretty well. I interviewed her for the book a year ago, June, and all her kids were there. They were doing fine, and she's a very strong woman, and I was convinced early on that she did do this, and the boyfriend didn't. I could never understand why they turned the tides on her.
What does she say? Does she say the boyfriend did it, or does she say nothing?
Well, she doesn't know because she wasn't there. Actually, she was trying to defend him because she never had any history of him abusing the kids or her or anybody else. But you know, the evidence was pretty clear as to how badly this child was beaten, and she kept telling the police, you know, when they questioned her, said it had to have been him. I was at work. If you find out the time of death and what was in his stomach, you'll know that. She was basically telling them how to do their job, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And the crime scene work, Al, was really bad. Really bad. It very incomplete, abbreviated. It was clear from the get-go that this child was beaten badly. It wasn't from no accident. But then the two of the crime scene investigators get up on the witness stand at the trial, and when they're challenged about the amount of time they spent at the crime scene and why they didn't do this and why they didn't do that, their explanation was, we didn't know it was a homicide, or it may have been a SIDS death. I mean, I just rolled my eyes. You know, one look at that baby, and you know it's not a SIDS death. And and it also contradicted the lead investigator who testified that, you know, we treated it as a homicide from the get-go.
Now, is Veronica back with that boyfriend ever, or are they?
No. She, in fact, he, during that 8-month period during the investigation, she actually had some major problems with him. He was threatening her. He assaulted her once, and the police did nothing. So finally, she packed up and moved out of town to distance herself from him. And then she didn't go back with him. She did initially right after it happened, because she told the police that, you know, she wanted to hear it from him and try to get him to admit what he did so she could tell them. But that didn't work. He never admitted anything to her. So yeah, she wow. packed her bag and moved out of town right up until the time that she was arrested. And then they used a jailhouse snitch who had a very lengthy history of arrests himself, and he's looking for a deal. So he tells the police that it was the boyfriend who made an admission to him that he killed the little boy. And he told them that like 4 times. And then when the police told him that they didn't believe him, he knew his deal was not gonna work out. So he changed his story and said that it was Veronica who confessed. And the appellate court pointed that out pretty clearly in their decision.
Yeah, what do you hope people get out of the book? Like when they take it home and read it, what are you hoping that they take away?
Just an awareness that this type of thing can happen. You know, I actually wrote a little segment in the book about, you know, it comes at a time when our nation is experiencing a lot of protests about justice and injustice, and these groups are demanding police reform and police change, much needed, and that's what really needs to happen here, because this should never have happened. And things need to change if we're going to prevent it from happening again, if it hasn't happened already. Like I said, I worked with some of these guys in the past, and I never had any reason to believe they'd ever do anything like this. So it was just really pretty bizarre set of circumstances as to why they did this.
I guess it probably affects your relationship with those people. I would imagine.
Well, you know, they're not going to like what I wrote in there, but, you know, they did what they did. And I find it very difficult, knowing what I know about Chucky Pratt, the boyfriend, and the evidence against him, I could never accept the fact that they thought they were doing the right thing by going after her instead of him. But at the same time, I didn't want to believe that they would frame an innocent woman, but all things considered, that's what they did.
Crazy. Sounds like
it
a
is.
Crazy
I mean, you,
story.
It'll make you angry when you read the story, what they did. And I have access to the entire case file, including the grand jury and trial transcripts. So, and they even videotaped the interviews of the boyfriend and Veronica. So, you know, there's direct quotes in there from what they said during those interviews and what they were telling the police and other people. It's all there.
Was this boyfriend the father of the infant?
No. She had 4 children. The oldest 2 were fathered by another man, and then her youngest 2 were fathered by another man. And she had issues with them. Both of them engaged in domestic violence with her, and CPS got involved, and so she severed her relationship with them, actually moved out of state at one point until she found out that the one father of her 2 youngest children was in jail and being treated for mental health issues. And so then she moved back to the Binghamton, New York area, and found a little apartment and a job working nights at the high school. And she was doing pretty well for herself. And then she got introduced to this Chucky, the boyfriend, who had moved up from the Bronx. And, of course, we find out that he had a drug history. He'd been in state prison for a while. But, no, he was not the father of any of her children.
Oh, okay. Now, so is everything okay for her now? Is she doing better now and the kids?
Yeah, she's doing much better. She's living out of state with her kids. I speak to her once in a while. She's anxious to read the book. In fact, she just got it the other day. Yeah, she's doing pretty well. She's living out of state. She's working. Her kids are doing well. I mean, I met all of her kids back last a year ago, June, when I went up to interview her. She introduced me to all her kids, and she seemed to be doing pretty well. Long time to get her kids back, especially her oldest. She'd actually been placed in a pre-adoptive home and was on the verge of being adopted. And like Veronica told me, said, I could have lost her forever. But it was just kind of in the nick of time that she was able to get her back. But it took 2 years after she got out of prison for being reunited with her kids. And then she said the kids hated her at first, she said, because of all the bad things her foster parents were telling them. And so she said it was an uphill battle. And then she had to go back to family court and fight them all over again. You know, one of the bizarre things also, Alan, was after she was released from prison and moved upstate New York, those witnesses that testified against her with those false allegations of abuse, they actually tracked her down and went up and found her and apologized to her and told her that the police had them believing that she'd killed her son and then needed their help. And they were pressured into saying things, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And then on top of that, she tells me that the jailhouse snitch also called and apologized to her, telling her that, you know, it was his second felony and he was facing time in prison, and the police were threatening to pin the murder on him. I said, well, they might have told him that, but I said, more than likely, he was just worried about his deal not falling through and going to state prison. But I was surprised that when I heard that. And then even more surprisingly was, she tells me that, when they came up here and apologized to me and told me what happened, she says, I understood and I forgave them, she said.
Well, yeah, it's a good thing. You don't want to hold on to that for the rest of your life, you know.
Yeah, it had to have been a lot of guilt.
Yeah, just crazy. Crazy story, and it sure makes you lose more faith every time a story like this comes out. Yeah. It makes you a little bit more wary of police, which I'm a big supporter of, and
I am too. I was in law enforcement for a long time, and but then I happen to notice over the years that the police started get people started losing respect for them for whatever reason, and people don't want to cooperate. They don't want to get involved. And it's probably because things like this happen.
I mean, the story spread and people talk,
She has a notice of claim filed with the attorney general, be compensated for her losses during her imprisonment.
Well, hopefully it works out for her. I mean, I don't know how well a lot of people do that get in that situation.
Yeah, no, I don't either. It's pending. I know there's been some depositions taken, but those civil things can take quite a while.
Yeah, and it doesn't always turn out. But
no, it doesn't always.
Well, now, do you have a website now still, or is it back up, or how is that running?
Yeah, I don't have the website up with the new book yet. But as soon as it all gets live on Amazon and some of the other sales platforms, then I'll put all those links on the website and it'll be available.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'll have it up on our website as well, so people can find it easily with one click and pick up the book. It's really a must read. I think people need to, you know, and it's a good story. You're really involved in it. You kind of know the case inside out, and that's perfect. You know, people.
Yeah, need yeah, that's the thing. You know, I knew every aspect of the case because I worked it very closely, and like I said, I have access to the whole file.
Yeah, well, that's important. A primary source makes it real. People gotta, you know, they'll pick up the book. Now, the book is called Immunity for Murder, and it's the Veronica Taft story, and the author is our guest, David M. Bears. Thanks a lot for telling us about your book.
Well, thanks for having me, and yeah, I would encourage everybody to read it, and if they have thoughts about it, you know, put it in a review. I'd be anxious to hear from them, regardless of what they have to say.
Thanks, David.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.